Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 329. I almost didn't get it in time. I'm Brian Cohen from Amazon Ad School, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, how are you on this fine day?
I'm doing great. I was hoping that the garbage truck would pass before I had to turn on my mic, but, you know, it's just things aren't always perfect. So
look, I've got my air on. People are probably hearing a hum. It is what it is. Honestly, in those first few hundred episodes, if people were staying for the sound quality, they were disappointed every single week. So I would not worry about it. What are you working on books-wise, Claire?
I just started my revisions for Killhaven Police Book 4, Deep Shift. It's fun. Yeah. I actually, you know, with the exception of like when I'm trying to revise three books at once over 6 months and don't get any writing, I actually do love revisions. So
I think that puts you in a special club because a lot of people do not like revisions, myself included.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I will probably be singing a different tune like 2 or 3 weeks in, right? Because it's after 2 or 3 weeks into revisions, you're like, you know, actually, I just hate books. So
I had forgotten about my hatred for books, but it has now reared its ugly head.
Found it.
Congrats on making progress there. If you had any tips for anyone who wanted to learn to love the revision process, do you have any mindset shifts anyone could take on for that?
Well, I just think of it as like, okay, we've done the first draft. That was hard, whatever. But now we get to do fun stuff. Like we get to really get our hands dirty and like make it an amazing book. Cause your first draft, it's like, okay, now it's a book kind of. And then now we make it an amazing book. Yeah. I didn't love revisions as much back in the day when I didn't know what to do with them, but I've learned how to make the most of them. So it's actually pretty fun.
Well, that is awesome. I think that anything can be fun if you turn it into a game a little bit, I guess. But yeah, it definitely, when you're getting to that point, you're like, can't the book just be over? It is tough to put yourself in that mindset, but making it enjoyable is always the best way.
Right. And it's also, I love it because it's the part where I can look at, you know, I'm going through it and I see a scene that I'm just like, oh, I don't really want to revise this scene. And then I go, okay, I'm going to cut it.
it's just the part where you're like,
yeah, we're just going to get through the non-fun parts of this book. We're going to get rid of them. We're going to see, you know, if there's something I need to keep from here that moves the plot along or, you know, moves the progress along in some way, then I'll keep it and I'll put it somewhere else. But like, I can ditch the stuff I don't like. So it's just this like great moment of like, yeah, this is all going to be fun.
Yeah. I like that. Well, may you maintain that attitude throughout this process and not even have that 2 or 3 week slowdown. I hope.
Yeah, here's to hoping.
So I wanted to let everybody know that my course, Amazon Ad School, is now back open. Been doing the 5-day challenge. We had over 8,300 authors who've participated. It's been a lot of fun. Many thousands of Facebook posts. Tens of thousands of reactions, lots of hearts and wows throughout.
Good. And you got to get those wows.
Yeah. I wish it would break down how many were wows. It doesn't say.
Well, it also is unclear what a wow means.
Very unclear.
Because sometimes someone says something so stupid, you go, wow.
It's kind of like, interesting. It's the interesting of reactions.
It is. Yeah.
So I just wanted to let everybody know that when you do purchase Amazon Ad School, you get lifetime access to all of the challenges. So that's April, January, et cetera, and all the future ones. We're doing some challenges just for students. including the Series Success Challenge and the Amazon Ad Scaling Challenge. And there are 30 days of direct email support from my team and I when you join. So that is at sellingforauthors.com/July20. And you can also get a Best Page Forward book description just by paying a little bit extra per month. It's $125 a month for 3 months of ad school. Bump it by 25 and you get a full-on $297 description, which is really a nice deal, according to me, the person selling the product. And so you can go to sellingforauthors.com/July20, pick that up before July 27th. So the offer ends between now and our next episode. So it is a good time to pick it up while Claire gets all the coughs and yawns out.
I'm having issues over here.
Yeah. You okay? Were you just so excited by this deal?
I was. I'm like a dog. Like, I yawn when I get kind of nervous or overexcited.
Yeah, my cat does the same.
It's like the wow emoji of my emotions.
Well, I am wowing at our patrons. And so this week I am going to thank all of our patrons who have been a part of Sell More Book Show. We really appreciate you. And we have a new feature. Claire, you didn't even know about. New patrons of the show will now get the show about 8 to 12 hours early. So if you...
Wow.
Wow, wow, wow. If you become a patron of the show, and if you are already a patron of the show, you will actually get a notification that says, hey, the show is up for you. Those other folks have to wait 8 to 12 hours for them to come up Wednesday. We'd give it to you earlier, but then you'd have to get the show before we record it, which would just be, it would just be Roland sighing into a microphone, basically.
It's impractical at best.
Yes, yes, at best. If you become a patron at patreon.com/SMBS and look out in your inbox every Tuesday evening, you will see a notification when you get the show before the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, new perks. We had a question of the week here, and we did not see too many responses, but we did get one great response. So the question was, how can you prioritize long-term reader farming instead of only focusing on short-term reader hunting? I'll let you take it because I've been blabbing for a minute, Claire.
Okay, I'll jump in, pull my fair share here. Steph Pajonas said, long-term reader farming is all about blog content for me. I try to write posts that will bring in readers to my website long after they are written by hitting keywords that are popular and applied to my fiction. So far, so good. A lot of my articles bring in people through Google keyword searches. Hopefully they stick around for the fiction. Smiley face.
A smiley face. Because Steph was the only commenter, Steph wins your course.
Wow, congrats. Who would have thought?
100% chance of that one. You can get your prize from Claire, the Supercharge Your Story course. Just contact Claire at contact@ffs.media to claim that prize. All right, we got some tips, and here we go.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, 5-minute marketing. Book marketing can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be, says best-selling author Zoe York. She's created a YouTube list of 10 5-minute marketing hacks for authors, starting with reading one of your own books. Simply highlight a few favorite lines of the ebook. Take a picture or screenshot of the print page to share on social media. And don't forget your buy link. Next, create a new Facebook header image, which only takes a few minutes to create in Canva. Gives you an image you can reuse in newsletters too. There's tips for everyone, like finally applying for that BookBub featured deal, or finally getting it, maybe. Writing a vignette, tiny scene, conversation between two characters you can share with fans. Other tips include making a backlist book free through BookFunnel to get new readers into your series, going live on Facebook just to say hi to readers, talk about your books, checking out what successful authors in your genre are doing themselves, including their Instagram or Facebook stories and feeds. If at any point you think, I don't know how to market my books this week, go to this list, pick one of them, literally put 5 minutes on the timer and see what happens. So Claire, I know you're not necessarily big on the socials. You've done some blogish stuff. Mm-hmm. What, if anything, sticks out to you as something you would try on this 5 minute frenzy?
Well, there's, I don't know. I mean, it's all good stuff is the thing. And it's all right. Stuff that I forget to do. You know, right. What I love about this list is that it's stuff that, you know, it may be new to some people, but for a lot of people, it's just going to be reminders. And I love a good list. And sometimes you sit down and you're like, all right, I got a little time. What do I do? And if you don't have that to go towards, you know, that list ready to go of like, oh, I can do this, right. I can do that. You can just forget to do stuff. I mean, I've forgotten to apply for BookBubs plenty of times.
And you get them.
Like, I get
them. You get BookBubs. So it's like money in your pocket and you forget to do it.
I know. It's stupid. And it's just, you know, like I don't set enough reminders. Like I set a lot of reminders, but there's just never enough. So, you know, it's one of those things that if you can just create that little 5 minute list, I love this concept that
right.
If you finish up a project early, you can just jump on one of these things, you know, and make some stuff because there's just a million little things to do in this job. And so it really helps to have someone just be like, hey, have you tried doing this one little thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's always fun to try something new that you think might be fun. Like if anything on the list sticks out to you, it's like, oh, that'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Like when I was doing my multi-author Facebook events, I was like, you know what I like doing? Bringing a bunch of people together and then seeing what kind of craziness ensues. Managed chaos. I did it with theater stuff with a 48-hour play festival that I ran 4 consecutive weeks with 4 different casts and 4 different writers. Sounds like something I would do, doesn't it? And that kind of energy I liked so much, I brought that into the marketing of my nonfiction books 6 years ago. And so it's like, if you can find something that makes you excited, that maybe doesn't take much time, it's worth a shot.
Yeah. And just, it can be so hard to think of good, like social media content. Her suggestion of like, well, read your book and just jot down some stuff. It's like, well, of course that works. You know, take a picture of a page and highlight it and put some filters on it or whatever, or just get some quotes. And there's, you know, the little automatic meme makers that you can throw those quotes in with some fancy fonts or whatever. And it'll just give you a nice little graphic for Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And those are little things that you can batch. So you could make 50 little graphics, you know, in an afternoon, and then just post one a day or one every other day and just keep that going.
Yeah. I love the list. I need to do better at it. Thankfully now I have people who force me to make lists. So for me. So let's go into tip number 2. And I believe it's you.
Readers want to know, want a fun way to market your books? One goal of marketing is to create content that attracts your ideal reader. And one great way to do that is to give them a behind-the-scenes look at how you do your research. In Joanna Penn's latest article, she shows how she uses research as a way to market her books and let her readers get to know her better. Quote, I use video, which is a great way to connect, and my fiction readers don't get to see me in person very often. Although she starts with video, she includes a transcript with images and links, which help the SEO, search engine optimization. Penn writes a simple script to read, which speeds up the video creation process and provides the notes for the video. Then it's time to record. Remember that it's not always a smooth process, so allow time for retakes, editing, and producing, especially at first. When it's ready, it's time to post and share the video. Penn uses the evergreen video in multiple places, starting with her Facebook page, then to her various YouTube channels. She creates a blog post with full notes and links and shares it on social media. Quote, video can be very time-consuming, says Penn, but it's worth it so that readers can see your face and your smile and connect with you more personally.
How do you get an introvert to try this? Because
I know Penn is
an introvert, but Joanna has done a lot of speaking and is a little, maybe a little more open to this sort of thing. How do you get an introvert to play with video?
Well, as an introvert who plays with video I'll give you the inside scoop.
Yeah, but you're also an introvert who plays with video who has run multiple podcasts. So just saying.
And I did study video and do some professional video editing. So I know how to use it. So there's the multiple things that you have to get past. There's the actual technical knowledge of like how to edit videos, where it's like, okay, what program do I use? What are the tools that I need to do? What are some like, you know, basic things that I need to watch out for so the video doesn't look super crazy? That's a separate discussion. That's a separate skill set. So you want to like separate that out and learn that at a different point. And then there's just the speaking to the camera. And so as an introvert, and I don't know if this is introvert, extrovert, but I suspect that it may be more of a perfectionism thing, but I don't love live video.
Live video is tough.
I don't love it. So I, you know, it feels comfortable to record to myself. And that's what it is. It doesn't seem, you know, you get, especially with the script. I mean, the fact that Joanna Penn writes out a script makes a lot of sense because you get to really process, because a lot of authors are better at expressing themselves through the written word. That's why we're authors. So you really get to sort of refine what you want to say. And then it's just a matter of reading it and trying to read with expression, right? There was like competitions for that in fourth grade or whatever. So yeah, and then you just edit out the parts you mess up and you make yourself look really good. And then if you don't look really good, you record it again. So yeah, it is a very big process, but it's not that intimidating once you get it set up.
Yeah.
Then it's just, you know, technical knowledge. And
systems are good.
Yes. And if you have one or two people that you can show the video to first to get some feedback, that'll save you some time too, because they may have some really kindly worded notes like, okay, maybe you need to adjust where the script is on your screen so it doesn't look like you're just staring down, you know, or it's like getting feedback on a speech that you have to give. So right. Just little tips of things that you may not notice about yourself, or you may be overcritical. And if you realize that people don't care about that, then you can just ignore it. So yeah, that would be the process that I would recommend for someone who's a little camera shy.
I like the process. And our process includes going to number three, pre-orders not recommended. Could pre-orders be hurting your book? Amazon pre-orders are becoming increasingly popular with indies. They may not be good for your book, says Kindlepreneur's Dave Chesson. While there are some benefits to this, there are actually a lot of negatives that hurt most authors, he says. Chesson's short video explains how pre-orders affect book sales. How to decide if it's a good idea for your book. Well, getting pre-orders ahead of publication sounds great. It also starts building your book's track record long before you make an actual sale, which can tell Amazon your book isn't very popular, and that can hinder your launch. Most readers don't buy pre-orders from authors they don't know. So visiting your book's page and buying could show Amazon your book might not be a big seller, negatively affecting popularity and relevance. In short, Chesson recommends against pre-orders unless you already have a large following, have a perfected book launch system in place, or are already famous. If you're not any of those things, says Chesson, you should not do a pre-order. Boom, big words from Mr. Vest. So I feel bad. I've been talking about Dave Chesson's vests a lot lately. But they're very nice vests.
It looks like he invested a lot into them.
Just so good, Claire. Mm-hmm. What do we say to this? I have had some books I've done pre-orders on, some books I haven't. I am interested in your thoughts.
What he says is true, I think. I mean, I don't know what to add. It really is like, if that's, depends on what your strategy is, right? Putting it up for pre-order can be really useful in that you know exactly when it's going to go live. Yes. So if you are planning launch stuff, you can, you know, schedule stuff ahead of time, because sometimes you upload it and you're like, yes, I'm, you know, my thing was always like, okay, do I upload it the night before? And then sometimes it comes out immediately, or sometimes it doesn't come out the day that I want it to come out. It takes an extra day. So I think that's sort of what I lean on, is like, okay, maybe I'll just do a pre-order. It also can just be like, hey guys, I have a book coming for my existing readers. But yeah, if you don't have people lining up for your next book, a pre-order isn't that useful.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's tough because it's one of those, if you have a book that does catch fire, it's nice to have a pre-order. Mm-hmm. Most books don't catch fire.
Right.
Like, most books don't suddenly sell 1,000 copies that you didn't expect them to. Some very, very written to market books will sell on a pre-order before anyone even knows that author. So there are some instances.
Right. And I've seen a lot of people using the pre-order as like a catch them for the next book thing, as like book 3, 4, 5, 6 in a series. You know, if you're going to do a huge promo for book one, you might as well get the next book in your series up on pre-order so that when people read through, it's already there. So they can go ahead and buy it. But that's because you already have people moving through your funnel of your series. Right. So it's not like, you know, you want them to move through and you want them to go somewhere. And if they're not all going to join your list, then you want to make sure that they don't forget about your series. So then you give, you know, that's kind of the only justification I can see.
Yeah.
She kind of talks about, I guess it would kind of fall under the, like, you have a big readership thing, but it definitely dilutes the sales, and it you don't get, you know, those sales, that the money comes in the day that you release it, but you don't get counted for sales on that day for all those pre-orders.
See, I have been a part of a couple of box sets that have hit USA Today bestseller list. And pre-orders are such an important part of that strategy, because if you're going to have any chance of hitting a list with a new release, I know that folks hit a list with like a Big Push or a Book Bub, but if you are going to have any chance with a new release, it's like 50% of those orders need to come in via pre-order, and you need about 6,000 or more sales. So you need the pre-order there, but in that, you're trying to get so many sales just in the first week that these kind of things don't matter so much. But for definitely like 95 to 97% of the author community, Dave is absolutely right. The pre-order isn't necessarily something you have to do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right now I'm building an anthology with people. It's not out yet, but we're doing a big pre-order thing. And that's because we decided to do that because we have 13 authors with huge, you know, amount of reach, and it's not all overlapping. There's a lot of authors that, you know, are sort of on the edge and aren't sharing all the same readers with us. So we can just push it over a longer period of time so that we can teach that, you know, teach the Amazon algorithm of lore that it's a book that people continually want up until release day, which it's in Kindle Unlimited. So it's going to shoot up with the page reads. But if we didn't have that big reach, it wouldn't have been a smart strategy.
Yeah. That makes sense. The algorithm of lore that they speak about in hushed tones over the fire.
And foretold.
They have foretold. All right. Here is the top five news. I guess you're up first, Claire.
Let's do it.
All right.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show top five news. Number five.
Fool me once. Gets scammed by a vanity press. Quote, it's easy to blame the author, to call them gullible for not doing their research, says John Doppler of the Alliance of Independent Authors. But vanity presses feed into a vast network of seductive and misleading scams. Years of operating this way have honed their grifting into a fine point. Worse than getting scammed once, authors who fall prey to a vanity press are frequently victimized again. When an author is burned by a vanity press, the lesson may be hard to take. The author may continue to pay more to the quote publisher because the predatory press continues to tell them they need to spend just a little more on marketing for that book to take off. Sometimes they cut ties with the press only to fall into the clutches of another vanity press or scam down the road. Having been scammed once, many authors do their research, but vanity presses have often already taken care of that too. Many people are deceived by a Better Business Bureau accreditation, but many consider the BBB accreditation itself to be a sham. Companies with abysmal customer service and hundreds of complaints have been awarded A-plus ratings with the BBB. Major warning signs are when a company has dozens of reviews or testimonials on one particular platform, but few on other sites, often a sign of fake reviews. Quote, always rely on multiple sources where possible, writes Doppler. Industry watchdogs, peer forums, and review sites generally offer good insights into a company's reputation, but no news doesn't necessarily mean good news either. For more examples of the tactics predatory services use and how to spot them, visit the article at selfpublishingadvice.org.
Long story short, some people are out there still pretty vulnerable to these scams, and we need to do the best we can to help people whenever they run into one of these and make sure. I've definitely run into an author who went with one scam and almost went into the second scam.
Right, the scam funnel.
It was two imprints of the same company.
Oh, gosh.
And so
they've got her info or his info.
Exactly, exactly. And that is just so tough. But I agree that we shouldn't blame the author. These are very, very well put together by someone who really wanted money and thought deeply about the process. And it's tough, but it is just, you make that kind of mistake. And I've made scammy mistakes before where I have been scammed and almost gotten swindled, and sometimes where I have, but you take it as the lesson learned and you don't give up, because that would be really a shame.
Right. Yeah. I just think that there's so much hope involved in this industry that that's what people are scamming other people on, their hope of, you know, getting their story out there. And so you can't really like fault someone for having that hope.
Yes. You're not allowed to denigrate someone for having dreams and wishes.
Right. And that's the easiest thing to exploit in general.
Yes.
If you're going to be super scummy about it.
Yes. It's tough, but we will continue to go to folks like Ally and Writer Beware to point out these kind of things to avoid.
Yep.
Yep. So let's go into number four.
Number four.
NetGalley goes audio. Looking for a way to get beta readers for your audiobooks, NetGalley has added an audiobook review service to its lineup, writes Publishers Weekly's John Mayer. I don't know if it's John Mayer. We're going to go with John Mayer. John Mayer! NetGalley recently announced its new audiobooks arm, making audio available on the service for the first time. We're thrilled to broaden the service to support audiobook publishers, Christina Radke, a VP at NetGalley, said. We believe early feedback is good for all books, and we're honored to be at the place where over 550,000 reviewers, booksellers, librarians, educators, and media discover review, end quote. In addition, the new NetGalley Shelf app will let users read and listen to review copies on Apple and Android devices. Both services are now available in the U.S. and the U.K., NetGalley pricing information is by request only, but our linked Kindlepreneur review of the service gives rough numbers, plus several methods that might reduce your costs. Reviews are tough to get when you're first starting out.
Yeah, they are. And the right kind of reviews.
Yes.
Reviews from the right people. It is very hard. I mean, I remember the days when I was just like, okay, I was individually emailing.
Oh, yeah.
Reviewers and just being like, please, would you do this? And it was just like crickets, crickets, crickets. Asking my friends like, hey, can you please leave this review? Like, I know you read it and I know you don't have the courage to say anything bad about me. So we just...
You're spineless. Could you post a review for me?
I feel like you want something from me, and like, I'll make a vague promise that you might someday get it if you leave this review. Yeah, it was desperation central. It was like all aboard the desperation train for those first few reviews. But these services are just invaluable to get them.
Yeah. I have not used NetGalley. Have you used NetGalley?
No, I can't attest to NetGalley.
I've heard the back and forth about, some people say that it's worked for them. Some people say that they've paid a lot and not necessarily gotten all of them. But this service has been around for a long time. It's not a fly-by-night. I'm actually pretty sure I met Christina Radke about 4 years ago, and she was maybe even interviewed on this very show. So what's important is that you decide on a strategy for getting more reviews, and you make it top three priority for you as an author, if you're going to get those out. Because if you say, oh, I will get reviews, I'll start working on this the day before, you're going to be left in the lurch. You're not going to have any reviews or hardly any reviews. And you don't want to be stuck in that, like we talked about the other day, where your first review could be a one star, and then you're really fighting that uphill battle.
Right. And the best time to incentivize reviews or people who are going to be reviewers is before the book is released, because it's, you know, it's not just like you'll get a free review copy, but you'll also get a free review copy before it's available for anyone to read.
Right.
So once you publish, you lose that second incentive. And then it's just like, do you want a free copy? And it's like, well, tons of people want a free copy, but you know, it may not be enough.
Yeah, it might not be enough to get them to take action.
Mm-hmm. One of my recommendations, and I hope that people will do this tactfully if they try it.
I'm a little worried.
If you
don't always do things tactfully.
That's not my fault. That's not on my property. So if you know someone in your genre who writes in your genre and you have a relationship with them and it's a good relationship, you can say, do you have any reviewers who would like a copy of my book? And it's a very simple thing, and they probably have reviewers, and they're probably happy to send some your way, because reviewers are pretty rapid for new books.
Yes.
And they read faster than anyone can write. So
and
most
it gets
people,
them off your back.
Absolutely.
That author's back. It's like,
yes.
It's like, hey, when's the next book coming out? Oh, take my friend's book. It's like throwing a steak to a dog to get it to leave
you
alone.
Take it. Yeah. So, you know, if you have that relationship with someone, you can ask. You can always ask. Or if you're in a group that's for that genre, just say, hey, does anyone have any, you know, reviewers that are looking for something new? That's an easy way to get some trusted reviewers in the right genre.
Hey, man, you got any reviewers? I can get you three and rows.
They open up their trench coat. What kind do you want?
You want fours? I got five stars. All right. And you are up for number three.
Number three.
A good bet. Every book is a gamble, so how does a publisher decide which book to bet on? Publishers ask two main questions, and they're the same two questions any gambler or author should ask. How much should we stake, and how much might we profit? The process involves educated guesswork, including how much it will cost to print, how many copies it will sell, the list price, how much it will take to market, and most importantly, will it appeal to distributors who sell, like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other booksellers? Quote, some of these numbers are based on actual data, writes Anne Trubeck, writing for janefreeman.com. Some are good estimates and some are inferences based upon past experience, but most of them are magical fairy dust wishes. Oh. A work of fiction, make-believe, sells that tally up the costs and revenue for a project that will not hit the market for another few years. However, Trubeck writes, even if they are often inaccurate numbers, it is important to see how the industry works behind the scenes, as books are not always as profitable as when the estimate was run years before. Okay, so while this is a peek inside in traditional publishing, perhaps indie authors can benefit from looking at it in their own work in a similar way. What do you think, Brian?
So I think that it is helpful to have an estimate of how your book could do, an estimate based on probably better data than what traditional publishing will end up using. I think that if you can look at what other books, maybe if you're releasing a book in a new series, based on how many readers you have on your list, based on how the previous one did, you can kind of make a cost-benefit analysis. I'm getting tired of the people who spend $500 on a cover and then aren't going to make, like, they're not going to make effort on, like, getting a developmental editor or something to know that their series is actually going to be well-written enough to sell. Or the folks who maybe get a developmental editor, get a big cover, and then they don't really plan any kind of launch or marketing and just kind of hope things are going to happen. It stinks to realize you're a business. We talk about it, but when you realize it, when like I've had several realizations, just like recently was the realization, oh wow, a lot of stuff happens in my business that I don't even know about. That's a weird revelation. Like, wow, there's like people who, unbeknownst to me, or like somewhat beknownst, they're taking action on my behalf, and there's many interactions that don't involve me. And it's like, okay, that's weird, like to have that out of your hands. But on the lower level, when you're first starting out, to realize like, oh, if I actually plan this, it takes extra time, but I do 20% better every single time.
Right. Yeah.
And that's tough.
Yeah. It's hard to sort of separate the spreadsheets from the magic fairy dust thinking.
Yeah.
But the magic fairy dust thinking is actually not very good.
No. I agree.
It's not. It feels good. It feels right. And then it's just not good. Because what it's actually doing is just you're diverting all of your decision making to your emotions, and emotions aren't super data driven.
No, they are.
Sorry to be the one to bring that up. But I also think that it's interesting that this is sort of how traditional publishing is running, because there has been such a controversy around like discrimination in publishing and like advances and that sort of thing, what people will and won't pay. And I feel like that comes from the magic fairy dust of like assuming that readers want one kind of author, one kind of story over another, and not necessarily data driven. And now they're like, oh, maybe we should do data driven.
Yeah, maybe we should look at numbers instead of trusting our gut. I mean, if you've seen the movie Moneyball, he was able to get Chris Pratt to play first base or something like that. But he used data, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And that is my summary of the movie Moneyball.
That is Moneyball, folks.
That is Moneyball. I should do more 20-second bad descriptions of movies. But the end result of that, and really any thoughts on money versus just gut feel, more often than not, looking at the numbers is going to get you a lot better results.
It may first feel like a gut punch when you realize that what you assumed to be happening was not the reality.
That is always hard. That is always hard. But we will look at the numbers, and we are going to look at number two.
Number two.
Running out of authors. Targeting other authors is a big part of successful ads. But what if you don't know who to pick? BookBub's latest ad feature is here to help. Choosing good ad targeting is a critical part of running successful campaigns. BookBub knows it can be difficult to identify similar authors to target. Quote, to help you discover new targets, we've added a new feature to the targeting section of our ad creation form, Related Authors, writes the BookBub partner team in their latest email. To use the new feature, simply add an author target to a campaign. BookBub will generate a list of other authors who share fans with them, giving you the ability to target those readers with your ads as well. Claire, BookBub, when they were first starting their ads, they saw that I was spending way too much money and said, hey, you want to beta test something for us? I was like, sure. And so I'm not doing anything. And right off the bat, the thing I remember saying was, you know, this would be a lot easier if you had related authors here, because otherwise you're just kind of hunting and pecking for different people. And I know that what I had to say didn't mean anything more than the thousands of other BookBub author advertisers who probably said the same thing. But this is good. This is a step in the right direction. You've run BookBub ads. How do you feel about this new feature?
I'm pretty excited to check it out because, you know, it's like you look on Amazon through your also bots, you know, if you're KU, they're mostly KU, or if you're wide, even if you're wide, they're mostly KU. And they're when you start running these BookBub ads wide, it can be really hard. Like discovery can be pretty hard if the authors that are related or that are a good match or that are selling, it's just not as easy to do. And so it does take a lot of time. So I'm really excited to use this feature, but I haven't had occasion to run BookBub ads since it came out, I guess, last week.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I haven't run a BookBub ad in a bit, but I definitely think that BookBub ads try to go into those with the right expectation that they can be a little pricier than something like Amazon or Facebook, or on par with Facebook, depending on how you use it. But BookBub readers are looking for certain things in their images. I wouldn't fly blind. Amazon ads let you fly a little blinder as long as you kind of keep the bids in the 30 to 35 cent range. BookBub, happy to spend your cash if you make a mistake. So,
oh yeah, they will do that for you.
Now, we love BookBub, and BookBub is
I know. Sometimes you want them to spend your money.
Yeah. Yeah. BookBub, I'm just glad that a lot of folks have used these ads and have had success with them, to the point that BookBub iterated and added this feature. So way to go, BookBub. Disclosure, BookBub is a sponsor of Self-Publishing Live. But we are excited to. I just was on the phone with them the other day, and it was, I saw this. I was like, you know, you're going to be in the top five. That's like, you know, hey, you're going to be in the top five this week, kid.
BookBub's really made it.
I know, BookBub, finally, after all this time. All right, let's go into the top story of the week.
And now the number one top five news item.
Kobo plus one. Need another reason to go wide? Kobo has just announced the launch of Kobo Plus in Canada. Kobo Plus is an all-you-can-read subscription service launched in 2017, but previously only offered in the Netherlands and Belgium. Similar to Kindle Unlimited, Kobo Plus subscribers pay a flat fee monthly to read unlimited books for as long as they're enrolled in the program. But unlike KU, Kobo Plus does not require exclusivity. If your books are already enrolled in Kobo Plus, you're all set, and your books are now available to subscribers in all subscription regions, now including Canada. This is a whole new audience, says Kobo. Quote, we found that the subscription model serves a different type of reader to the a la carte model. This is a great option for those voracious readers who love to binge an entire series over a weekend. It's an opportunity for you to make your titles, and especially your backlist, more accessible than ever to a wider audience.
Mm.
Fun.
I love this thought that subscription readers are different. They're a different type of reader, just like a paperback reader is going to be different. Paperback reader. Okay. So they're going to be
and
different.
And we're sued.
And yeah. Well, thankfully, I was off tune enough that Spotify didn't pick up on it. But I feel like keeping that in mind, knowing where the different readers are going to be, and if you go wide and did have success with a subscription platform like Scribd or like Kobo Plus, then maybe you do get to tap into those readers without being a part of KU. My thing is always going to be, I want to hear the Kobo Plus success story. I want someone who has made a lot of money off Kobo Plus to come knock on my door and for me to say, is this DoorDash? And for them to say, no, this isn't your tacos. This is a Kobo Plus success story.
How did you get my address?
How did you get my address? But what are your thoughts on it? I know you're playing with Wide. Will Killhaven be in Kobo Plus?
It already is, Brian.
Sweet.
I don't know that anyone's read it in Kobo Plus yet, but it is in there. I think this is a pretty new thing. So
Kobo Plus Canada is.
Yeah, the Kobo Plus Canada. I don't know that I had a huge readership in the Netherlands and Belgium. So I'm not heard that no one has read it yet through Kobo Plus. But yeah, I think this is great. I am all for, you know, this model. I think it's good. I'm happy getting a little less per copy, you know, if that's what it comes out to for the reading or for, you know, the page reads. Just like on Amazon, you generally get less per copy unless you have one of those thick books.
Yeah.
It's got to be real thick now.
It's got to be real thick.
That was just as creepy as I had hoped.
You set me up for it. But
I did.
Well,
so, I'm happy about this.
Yeah, I think that more opportunities for readers to make money, it's a very good thing. And we want to try to, if we are going to go wide, you want to try all these different opportunities out, but you need to treat them as if it is a separate product launching.
Yeah.
You want to launch and advertise your book on Kobo, because your book on Kobo is a separate thing. You want to launch and advertise your book on Apple, because your book on Apple is a separate thing.
Yep.
And that puts a lot of new steps on the docket. But if you wanted to be simple, you could have gone just with KU. But
true.
But if you want, and I'm not saying it's necessarily the best thing. I'm just saying it is simpler because it's one location. If you want to go with something more complex, but maybe with the ability to get a longer term readership across the world, then you go wide, but you still have to treat it like a series of separate launches.
Right. It's almost like each one of those is its own separate business.
Yes.
Each channel, you run a separate business there.
The Apple business.
Mm-hmm. And it's not so bad on Kobo because they do have the promotions tab. You can kind of laser focus on that. You can always use BookBub ads to target a specific readership. So, you know, it may not be a bad idea to do something like target some BookBub ads to Kobo Canada and put a little in, you know, now in Kobo Plus or something on there and just see what happens. See if you start to get some page reads.
Sounds like a really good idea.
Thanks, Brian.
Way to go, Claire. Yeah, you're welcome. We need a question of the week here. Do you have any particular stories you are interested in the BookBub targeting the Kobo Plus, the TradPub guesstimation? Anything sticking out to you?
I would almost go back to that little list of 5-minute tasks.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because people are always commenting that there's so much to do and so much information. And so maybe we could do a little 5-minute task list.
Okay. What is one 5-minute task you could do to promote your book today?
Ooh, I like it.
Me too. Thank you. You can answer the question of the week over at sellmorebooksshow.com in the comments section, and you have a chance to win a prize, especially if you're the only commenter. And then you will definitely win a prize.
Unless you've already won the prize, then no more prizes.
You get a second copy of that wonderful course. Claire, any words of wisdom before we sign off today?
No.
Great. Well, I always love asking you too, because I know that like 40% of the time, yes. 60% of the time, awkward. Silence.
I got to keep people on their feet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They can't win every time.
Not even their toes. If you want to get some really supported work on Amazon ads, you want to be able to ask as many questions as you want throughout the process of learning, and you want to get some info on how to scale up your Amazon ads, you can go to sellingforauthors.com/July20 to pick up the Amazon Ad School course before the bonus package expires on July 27th. So very excited to be able to do a show. And then tomorrow in podcast time, I get to do a whole big webinar. And then it will be yesterday in podcast time. I don't know. But it's fun to be able to teach and talk and news all week. It is just a series of things that I enjoy doing. So thanks for listening, Claire, and everybody.
I was about to say, you assume I was listening to that.
Well, I know you were listening to parts.
I was
otherwise
listening,
we wouldn't have had any sort of, it would have been those like two separate conversations.
Dead air. Yeah.
Yeah, definite dead air. Well, thank you to Claire. Thank you to Roland. Thank you to everybody who listens to the show. We'll be back next week for episode 330. Have a great week of book selling, everybody. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.